Today, on the exam room.
When we start loading our plate more with these amazing whole plant foods that are healing, that you can't find in animal-based products. And when you give your body those, the body goes, finally, I'm giving the foundation to thrive and feel amazing.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Hi to the Exam Roomies listening in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Santa Clara, California, and Budapest, Hungary. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 10 of season 8, number 609 overall. And today is all about plant-based 101, because we can all use a refresher sometimes. And for those of us just getting going, this is your day. Because joining us today are Dr. Laurie Marvis and Brittany Giroudi. They have just put out a brand new book called Plant-Based 101, The Ultimate Guide for Mastering the Plant-Based Diet. And we are going to take you from zero to hero when it comes to eating plant-based in a very short time, my friends. Here's everything that we're going to cover today. The best vegan beef substitutes, ditto for chicken substitutes and cheeses. You're going to hear Brittany rave about how easy it is to replace cheese with non-dairy cheese. So easy and so healthy to do. You're also going to hear Dr. Marvis talk about the health ramifications of the foods that we eat and why gravitating toward a plant-based diet can really lower that inflammation that burns throughout our body a lot of times, driven by what it is that we eat, and how a plant-based diet can help to extinguish those flames, really bring down the risk of all kinds of chronic diseases, and even increase your lifespan. Plus, we're going to talk about getting enough protein and saving a ton of money while you do it. And then questions from the exam roomies who were able to join us live this week on the Exam Room Live. We do that every Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Physicians Committee's YouTube channel and Facebook page. We've got links to both right now in the episode notes for you. We're also going to be talking about getting all the nutrients that you need while eating a plant-based diet, help for GERD. We had a great question from Ian, who was watching live this week, and so many more. So Plant-Based 101 is on the way today, my friends. So let's dive in with Dr. Laurie Marvis and Brittany Giroudi from the Exam Room Live. Thank you guys so very much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
All right, Brittany, I got to start with you. Please introduce our very special guest.
Oh, this is our whole food plant-based baby, Paul. So he's been eating plants since he was conceived. So,
what are Paul's favorite plants?
Sweet potatoes right now.
Oh, Paul's got good taste. Paul's got good taste. Are you on the sweet potato train, Dr. Marvis?
Oh my goodness, yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's just dive right into this, because I feel like with a 101, there's so much that we could cover. And for the exam roomies who are watching live right now on X and YouTube and Instagram, wherever we're streaming this show, go ahead and drop your questions for Dr. Marvis and Brittany in the comments or in the chat. We're going to get to as many as we can when we open up the mailbag in just a little bit. And I want to start with really a question from my father-in-law, Charlie. I'm going to let him Bogart this conversation up front. He is very much that meat and potatoes guy. He lives with us, and even though he sees how I eat is completely different than what he eats, he just can't envision a life that doesn't include red meat. But Brittany, I know that you are such a whiz in the kitchen. Can you just give Charlie some help and say, hey, Charlie, these are what you want to eat instead of that red meat, and it's still going to taste delicious?
Yeah, I love soy products like tempeh, soy curls, tofu for those meaty replacements, as well as beans and legumes. I feel like now there's so many recipes online and definitely in our book that can help you replace it if you're a meat lover.
Can they actually replicate the taste though? I mean, that's the thing. He's like, you know, I love a steak. Let's go to Longhorn, which honestly I don't mind, because as a plant-based eater, I find it really easy to get, you know, steamed broccoli and a sweet potato that I know Paul loves at a steakhouse. So that's not very much a problem for me, but I'm yet to see a really good replacement for just a juicy steak like he likes.
I mean, yeah, there's not going to be 100% one-to-one switch, but when you get off the red meat, I feel like how much you feel better outweighs what you're looking for. So I do think that tempeh and soy curl, something like that, are probably the closest to meat to replace it. But again, how much you feel better with your digestion after really makes up all the difference.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a second. But if somebody wanted to replicate those flavors, because it all comes down to the seasoning, right? What would you recommend? Is it as simple as, you know, that tempeh and then you just drizzle A1 on top of it? Or how would you go about giving that nice flavor?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different sauces that you can put on it now, from barbecue to even like a savory sauce, and all the seasonings that you can add. So really it just depends whatever you're trying to replicate. But generally, I just think of, you know, our meat substitutes as swapping it out with a different whole food plant-based protein source. And then really, again, it's the seasonings and the sauce that make everything taste wonderful. So finding a sauce that replaces whatever your recipe you're looking at.
All right, Dr. Marbus, I want to pivot over to you. You just heard Brittany talk about you're going to feel better. Your digestion is going to work a little bit better. And then, you know, we see these warnings about red meat. So let's talk to the person who is like Charlie and loves him some steak, loves some hamburgers. What are the, just 101, as the book suggests, what are some of the real health risks that are associated with eating a really red meat heavy diet?
Well, I think it goes back to understanding that meat in and of itself is pro-inflammatory, right? Which really sets the conditions for chronic disease like elevated cholesterol, heart disease, diabetes, those type of things. So when we think about removing it, we're actually removing something that can cause cancer, cause inflammation, and, you know, especially thinking about insulin resistance, there's high saturated fats, there's high cholesterol. So my approach is not so much fear-based, really, when I talk to people who are entertaining the idea of trying to feel better with nutrition. It's just really understanding when we start loading our plate more with these amazing whole plant foods that are healing, that's really where the conversation needs to go. Instead of saying, where am I removing something, but what am I adding, right? So you're adding foods that are anti-inflammatory, that have these amazing nutrients that you can't find in animal-based products. And when you give your body those amazing nutrients, the body goes, finally, I'm giving the foundation to thrive and feel amazing. So that's really the point here that I'd like to hone at. And so when people start looking to transition to a plant-based diet, I would say release the desire or the need to replace it one-to-one, right? Those red meats, those steaks, and really focus in on what are these foods in and of themselves? What can I utilize with these foods? There may be moments of missing the steak, but just remember, you're also going to be missing the diabetes, the heart disease, and the joint discomforts, the digestive upset that comes with those meals. So when you really think about it, you're like, yeah, but that's okay. I'm also releasing all those things that come with it. And so that's really the point we like to drive home, is really thinking about our mindset. Because when we approach the plant-based diet with an appropriate mindset, a mindset of healing, and not so much of deprivation, that's when we really see one, magic happen, but also the sustainability, right? So we hear so many people struggle staying on it. That's because they're walking into it thinking, oh, I need this one-to-one substitute. And then they're disappointed when it's not exactly like they did before.
I like the honesty there, because I think that it would be so easy to say, well, eat a mushroom instead of the steak and you'll be good to go. But you're open and you're honest about it. And no matter how much A1 you drizzle on there, nothing's going to, you know, replace the steak there. And so, like, that's good to have those realistic expectations. You used a term that I feel like is very much become a buzzword right now, Dr. Marbus, and that's inflammation. I think a lot of people, when they think inflammation, it's like, oh, I cut my finger, and I did. And my, you know, obviously became a little bit swollen, a little bit inflamed. That's the inflammation that most of us think about. But you're talking about internal inflammation. Can you kind of explain what you mean there?
Yeah. So when you think about acute inflammation versus chronic inflammation, right? So you have acute inflammation like your injury, right? You have a cut, you have a sprained ankle, you have a broken bone. The body comes and says, oh, we need to call in the reinforcements and really start the healing process, right? So what you'll see here is you'll see it kind of come up, it'll peak, and then it'll trend downward. As the body starts healing, That's an appropriate use of inflammation. Now, when we see chronic inflammation because of several things, right? It is our diet. We're walking around with extra weight and we're, you know, eating these ultra processed foods that all we do, the body's like, what is this foreign chemical that you're asking me to digest, right? So those are the things that the body's dealing with. So it raises inflammation. And so when we do this, it's like this chronic stress, also stress, right? Our mental and social and emotional stress that we basically submit ourselves to, because we, again, we choose to see it in that perspective. We create more inflammation just from our emotions. So there's so many things that are occurring with this chronic inflammation, and you can actually measure it in the body. For example, something like hsCRP, which is that high sensitivity C-reactive protein, which really kind of points to, you know, inflammation within the cardiovascular system, putting you at higher risk for heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, those type of things. So that chronic inflammation is really the setting foundation for chronic disease like cancer, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, all of those things that people are really struggling with, that's almost become normal now. So when you don't have medications or you don't have one of these diagnoses, you're abnormal, which is really sad to say, right? Because really normal means that we're eating, we're thriving with the healthy body that we were probably hopefully born with, and that is really what we need to cultivate. So there's obviously something going wrong with our culture, the way we're implementing our diet, our nutrition, our exercise, all these things to cause this inflammation that makes the body start to break down. Because the body only has a threshold. And once you see that threshold, that's when you start seeing disease start to evolve from a body that's just trying to maintain balance.
Yeah, trying being the optimal word. And it's funny, if you look at just kind of like the human species, how long we've been around versus, you know, how recently these problems have really begun to sunk in. It seems like really since kind of the Industrial Revolution and the processed food revolution in the mid 1900s, like we've just seen this explosion of diabetes and all kinds of chronic illnesses when we started to introduce these things into our system that had never, ever, ever been there before since we were around. Brittany, going to come to you in just a second, but first I want to say hi to Ian, who's watching right now in Norway. Sonia's in Arizona. Lee is in Lubbock, Texas. Hi, Lee. How you doing? Susan's in Bradenton, Florida. Mary is also in South Florida. We got people tuning in from all over. We've got Leonie in Auckland, New Zealand. That might be the winner for furthest away today. So very cool. Thank you guys so very much for being here. Let's switch from beef over to chicken here. Brittany, coming to you, kind of the same question that I gave you up at the top. Even if there's not a one-to-one substitution here, what would you recommend if somebody was really a big fan of chicken?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at beef and you're looking at chicken, kind of the same things can apply. Again, you can stick with something like a soy curl, and soy curls are actually my favorite thing for a chicken replacement because you can shred them. If you can't get soy curls, jackfruit is also a great alternative. And if you can find trumpet mushrooms, those also shred. So those are kind of my three, soy curls, trumpet mushrooms, or jackfruit. And like I said, you can shred them exactly like you would chicken, and you can flavor them however you'd like. So, you know, we're thinking of that chewiness from chicken and beef that you're replacing. And so again, it depends on the seasonings. It depends how you use it. You can chop it up or, like I said, shred it, but it's so versatile. I mean, I'm a big soy lover for lots of different reasons. And so I think that's the best for replacing some of that meatiness while keeping all those health things that we want in a whole food plant-based lifestyle.
You know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, 9 years, however long I've been on this plant-based journey of mine now, I honestly can't even remember. It's just my normal now. But anyway, I found it so much easier to substitute chicken recipes than any other type of meat. I mean, right down to even cauliflower wings, which are delicious. And oh, by the way, I've fooled professional football players with cauliflower wings who think that it's like so good. Yeah. You know, you just throw a little bit of hot sauce on there and they went to town and they had no idea. I was like, bro, you're eating cauliflower. We're like, what? I was like, yeah. We're like,
you have a great recipe in the book for KFC bowls, which kind of has a cauliflower wing substitute there. So it's really a great one too for some meat lovers that you're trying to get transitioned to a more plant-based lifestyle.
You did a KFC bowl replica? That's awesome.
Bowl is in the book. Yeah.
That's so cool. And by the way, there's a link to pick up your copy of the book right now, Plant-Based 101, that is in the show description and in the episode notes. I got my copy this morning. It's on Kindle. It was actually part of my Kindle Unlimited subscription. I was very, very pleased to see that, but definitely going to get a hard copy as well. We'll put that up on the book wall of fame back here for you guys. So Dr. Marbus, chicken is thought of by and large by a lot of people to be the healthier option, right? White meat. It's the healthier meat. It's lean. It's definitely healthier than red meat, but still it poses its own risks. When somebody comes to you and they say, hey, chicken's healthier than red meat, what do you say?
No. Right. So let's think about, I think chicken is the one, it's like the one animal that's probably is consumed the most. The most birds are killed. I don't know all the data around that, but I think I do recall hearing that, but you have several things, right? Heavy metals, chemical contaminants, like arsenic, cadmium, lead, those type of things. You have microbial contamination, such as salmonella and campylobacter that can come with chicken. You also have antibiotic kind of resistance, right? So the residues of antibiotics in chickens, because they're crammed into these very small spaces, so they're given antibiotics. And now that poses a significant public health challenge, because now we're, you know, be exposed to this antibiotic resistance. So if you are very ill, our medications aren't going to work as well. And then you just have to worry also about just, you know, what other diseases that are in the, they're in like an avian flu type situation, like that, can that transmit to human? I don't know. So those are the things you have to be really careful of. And honestly, it kind of freaks me out just a little bit thinking about, like when you go to the grocery store and peek about the people and the meat and all the things that they pick up in the grocery store and they're laying and they're touching the handle. So it's a good idea to go ahead and swipe the handle, because those things can be transmitted to you, E. coli and different things based on, you know, what those people were touching when they put the cart back. So the chicken is not healthy. It's also high in cholesterol, you know? And so, again, this just gets to points to what foods can you eat that will your body allow to thrive and heal, and, you know, removing the things that are causing the smoldering inflammation and the disease process to continue. Let's stop fueling the wrong thing.
Let's talk about cheese really quick, Britt, before we open it up to the mailbag. We talked meat. Now we got to talk cheese. We're covering the whole charcuterie board this morning. I say this so often on the show, but I'm telling you, not a day goes by that I don't have a conversation with somebody who isn't vegan, or maybe they're just vegetarian and they can't seem to cross over all the way to that vegan threshold because they can't give up cheese. But my wife will be the first to tell you that, man, there are some delicious plant-based cheeses out there. You say that there's not a one-to-one for meat out there, but for cheese, at least in my opinion, as the consumer, it is you who is a master of the kitchen. What do you say to somebody who says that they could go vegan, except they can't give up their cheese?
Yeah, cheese is definitely way more easier to replicate, thankfully, with all the different sauces and techniques out there. So we love doing a cheese sauce in a blender, and then you can even move that to a stovetop pot and thicken it up with something like tapioca starch and make it stringy. Again, kind of whatever you flavor it. So if you like more of a smoky cheese, if you want to marinate some tofu and make it more like a feta, it's all options are available. So we've done everything from a nacho cheese to a mozzarella to feta, like I said. You could do a sprinkled cheese replacement for your pasta dishes. I mean, I feel like cheese is the easiest to replace. It may be the hardest to give up for some people, but definitely there are so many options to make it easy and make your food taste delicious. So we've done all sorts of things, from making a white bean cheese sauce to one with cashews and sunflower seeds. Again, you can make it thick, put it on your pizza even. Mozzarella dollops, and we haven't missed it since also being plant-based for a really long time.
Daggone, that sounds delicious. That actually sounds like that's going to hit the spot right about now. As cold as it is, a nice hot plant-based pizza, let's go. Yeah, I can get on board with that. So I'd love to hear that you know, kind of the way that this book is designed is to kind of put people at ease. It doesn't mean never eating your favorite foods again. It's about transitioning over to a healthier plant-based lifestyle. And I know that that's one of the goals of this book, Dr. Marvis, as well as on your website with your courses and in your practice, is just helping people with this transition. And since we're kind of at a 101 here, do you recommend going hardcore overnight, ditching meat, ditching dairy, and just taking the plunge? Or do you find when you're working with people, kind of that gradual tapering toward the plant-based diet is the more successful route to take long-term?
It really depends on your personality and where you are in your desire to stop your suffering. That's just how I describe it, really. Because if I have someone who's been very ill for a long time, they may be more motivated and more willing and capable to go in all overnight, right? Especially if they have a supportive environment, you know, being their family, friends, and such. So that person may very well go, I don't want to take my time. But the majority of human beings need to take a little bit of time to kind of understand that one, yes, you are going to be able to eat foods beyond carrots and lettuce, and that yes, you're going to eat amazing food that makes you feel good, and just your body is going to feel amazing, more energy, sleep better, reduce medications, all those things. But there's some habits that need to kind of evolve with that, right? It's you know, food prep, you know, thinking about how do I travel, what I look on menus. So there's a few skill sets that will make the transition less stressful. So when you start moving slowly, you doesn't seem like you have to do it all at once. It's kind of like the New Year's resolution when someone's like, I'm going to, you know, start training tomorrow, run 5 miles so I can run my marathon in 2 months, you know? So that's kind of that people are like, I'm going to go all in and clean it all out. That is how I started. And there was a slight, you know, stressful weekend, but we got through it. That was 13 years ago. but there's some different ways to approach it, right? So maybe you start with just adding some simple as just adding more fruits and vegetables to one meal a day, right? As you start learning about more recipes, or you start learning about, okay, I have diabetes, how should I approach this in a more healthy manner? So though you can take time to learn. And that's kind of what we did. We set this up as kind of like, not necessarily lessons, but the questions that we hear all the time. So Brittany and I run a community called The Healing Kitchen, and we meet live weekly. We have workshops every month. And some of those common questions are like, well, what do I do, like the substitutes, or what do I do when I'm going for the holidays, right? Those were some great questions that we had there. What do I do with my diabetes? How do I decrease my medication? What about these people who say this, you know, I'm all alone in, you know, Northern Michigan, what do I do? So those are the type of questions. And so those we've heard over and over. So between Brittany and I, we have around 22 years of plant-based experience. And so that, you know, being plant-based pregnant, I wasn't plant-based pregnant, but she was, she's raising this infant. I had teenagers when we transitioned who are now in their late 20s and 30s doing fabulous. And so those are some really cool learning opportunities to speak to someone for us. But if you can't, this is what we tried to put in the book. And so it's really a guide and a manual to answer all those questions. What labs should you be looking at? What supplements should you be looking at? How can you approach this if you do have children? What about older adults? What about, you know, if you're an athlete? And so these are the questions and the conversations that we need to be having. But if you don't have someone to have them with, that's where this book can come in, right? And so it's kind of the primer to the next step. And so it'll get you moving in the right direction, tells you where to get started. We do have recipes, close to 30 or so, but it's more of a guide to understand kind of the, what are the obstacles I might be looking into, or what are the benefits that I'm going to see when I start a plant-based diet? What is a whole food plant-based diet, right? And just really breaks it down into very simple language. It's not meant to be, you know, heavy on scientific literature. There's some amazing authors who have done that many, many times over. So we're trying to approach this from the practical standpoint, because when I see patients, because I'm licensed in all 50 states and DC, I see patients, they're very few worried well, right? Most of my patients, over the thousands of plant-based patients I've seen, are individuals who started a plant-based diet and they've hit a plateau where they're struggling, or they have really sincere questions. They're just like, I don't know where else to turn to. There's a few tweaks involved, and bam, they're back on the road to thriving. So that's a really important piece here, is like, we wanted to show, yes, there's hiccups that you can avoid by understanding what they might be. How can you plan for these things, right? And so then they don't worry and dwell on it. And they're just like, I don't even want to deal with this, and just shut out. You know, it's like, I'm going back to my way of eating. It may not have been the healthiest, but at least it's familiar and I know what I'm doing. So that's what we want to do, is how can we accelerate that learning in a very simple, easy manner that they can really grab hold of the plant-based diet? It's like, yes, I get it. I know what to do and I know what to expect. And when you have that knowledge and that planning, it's kind of like, you know, doing meal prep for the week. This is kind of like plant-based planning prep, right? So you're understanding what you need to do, the next steps. And if you do find a hiccup, we probably covered it here. And if not, you certainly know how and where to go to find the answer. And so that's kind of the where we were trying to be with this, because we haven't seen that type of guide in the plant-based world. And there's so many people who've given up on the plant-based diet because of simple things they could have done if they would have just known. And that's why we wanted to make this super easy to consume, super easy to understand. And that was the reason we started this.
And, you know, Dr. Marbus, one of the things that really kept me ultra motivated as I was making that transition and was hitting some of those roadblocks, a little bit of those obstacles, was some of the science behind, obviously, the health. And, you know, once I started to feel better, I was like, man, I hope I feel like this for a long time to come. And then I saw the data on, you know, potential lifespans for people eating a plant-based diet versus the typical omnivorous standard American diet. Really quick before we open up the mailbag, and I promise we will now, I've teased that twice. What is the average lifespan for somebody that eats a plant-based diet? What do those numbers show?
That is interesting. I would have to go back and look at the exact numbers across like all cultures, but I would like to point to the blue zones. And I think that's a really interesting data point here. So you have places around the country or around the world. In the United States, it's just up the road from where I am now, Loma Linda, California, for example, who eat a plant predominant diet, right? And so you look at Okinawa and you look at the different places that these folks, some in Costa Rica, they have the largest number of centurions, right? These are people who live in their hundreds, to their hundreds. And the beautiful thing is these are not the people that you'd expect to who are hitting 100. They're living independently. They're working in their gardens, right? They're active. They're getting down and up and up and down off the floor, right? So they're living a very full and rich 100 years. So it's just amazing to think that to live to 100 and, you know, having crossed the half century mark myself, and as I'm moving into my first grandchild coming this summer, I'm sitting here going, my first 50 was amazing. Let's see what my next 50 can look like. And so the whole food plant-based diet is one of those foundational pillars for really living a long, healthy lifespan. So it's not just, can I extend my life? We really want it to make it a health span too, right? So it's the lifespan plus the health span. But the data around just plant-based eaters, that's a really interesting question. I haven't been asked, but I will have to go look that up.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. If you're listening to the audio podcast, I'll see if I can pull those stats and give it to you in the wraparound. A little bit of fan love from Jeremy to you, Doc. He says, stay awesome, Doc. I enjoy your content. So stay awesome. Message has been relayed. Let's see here. I want to pull a good question. All right, here you go. Britt, I'm sending this one to you. It comes to us from JD, and he sent this in at 12:15. He said, hey, I'm a vegan and a bachelor, and I don't have much of an interest in cooking. Welcome to being a man. So I eat a lot of frozen faux meats with frozen veggies and frozen potatoes. Is this somewhat of a healthy diet? So, first of all, before we get to the health thing, Britt, I want to ask you, like, you know, when it comes to just keeping it easy in the kitchen for somebody like JD, what would you recommend?
I mean, luckily now we have companies like Whole Harvest and Leafside that have some stuff that you can buy, and you can buy them frozen or freeze dried and make them. So if you're looking for something to order that you don't have to even think about, there are some companies that are whole food plant-based and even SOS free. But you can make things ahead of time and freeze them, and frozen vegetables and frozen fruit and things like that are wonderful. I incorporate those a lot in our daily life. But I mean, like to whip up, you know, even like using canned beans or using something like I mentioned earlier, like soy curls, it takes about less than, you know, 5 minutes really to make. So there's a couple of things you could do. I try to stay away from those faux processed mock meats, personally. But yeah, look into if you can swing it and you have the means to do it. Leafside and Whole Harvest are great sources.
All right, and now let's turn to the health side of this, Dr. Marbus. The frozen faux meats that are in the grocery store freezer aisles now, what is your take on that from a health standpoint? And I guess I want to frame it, you know, healthy compared to what? So, you know, is it, if, could we look at it like a traffic light system here, green, yellow, red?
That's a really interesting way to frame the question, right? So healthy in relation to what? I think that's great. Is it better than eating meat? I would say yes. Way I like to look at these things are if I have someone who's very much struggling, right, in the transition to a whole food plant-based diet, I was like, okay, at least let's move into this framework of understanding I choose plant-based foods. I choose plants over animal products, right? So sometimes it's that part. Again, I'm getting back to what is our mindset? Because really this, the brain between our ears is the issue. And if we can start working with it, help it reframe what we're doing, that's the next step. And so really thinking about, okay, what if I need to do this? Like, which one are the healthiest ones, right? The mock meats, and like, and try to keep this as a limited time as possible on this particular type of, you know, substitute meat, I guess is what we'd call it. But it is healthier than the animal products. But these are still going to be high, you know, full of saturated fats. They're going to be full of, you know, they're ultra processed foods. But at least we're moving in the direction. We're starting talking about plants, right? We're moving in that direction. And so that's how I like to look at this. I never want to tell someone, no, you can't do that. I never want to be that restrictive. I want to say, okay, well, let's talk about it. Let's see what the pros and cons are. And let's put a time limit on it, right? So as you're wanting to do this, why are you wanting to do this? Is there other ways we can approach it? And if they're like, no, I just really want to utilize that, I was like, that's fine. It's meeting you where you're at, right? But at the same time, encouraging you, nudging you in the right direction where you'll actually see the health benefits of a whole food plant-based diet, because you're not going to see them when you still are incorporating the ultra-processed foods, being vegan, plant-based or not. If you really want to see what can a whole food plant-based diet do for you, you need to be all in at some point. You know, that gradual transition is fine, but you really need to start pushing, you know, what you thought you're being comfortable for. Let's push the threshold of what you thought you might be willing to do. I'm like 80%. I'm like, well, then don't be surprised if you only get 80% of the, you know, expected benefits.
That's a really great way of looking at it. I love this next question from Hisham, who is another long distance viewer watching today in Saudi Arabia. And this goes to the heart of the 101 part of plant-based and wondering, well, is this going to work? Is this going to be healthy? How should I do it? 1218, the question is, how can I ensure that I am getting all the essential nutrients that my body needs for optimal health while eating a plant-based diet? Doc, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think that's a great question, right? Because a lot of people will struggle or are concerned. So we have kind of a little system, a little framework we call the root, right? And so you really want to focus on understanding one is your why are you transitioning, and then optimizing your plate. So O is optimize, and then we talk about overcoming obstacles, and then tweak and treat, you know, track and tweak. And so this really gets to optimizing your plate. So what you want to make sure that you're doing on as regular basis as possible is eating throughout the plant-based kingdom. So you have your fruits, veggies, beans, whole grains, nuts, and seeds. So there are some individuals who are very nut phobic because of the high calorie density. So, you know, let's start with just a handful. And that's really all you need. You need to get some very important minerals that come with nuts and seeds, you know, the omega-3s, especially if you do like chia seeds and walnuts and those type of things. That's one way to start. But the other way is to look at the colors of the rainbow, right? So how many times can you hit every color of the rainbow? And that's really an important thing to think about, because with different colors come different phytonutrients. So if you're doing that on a regular basis, you're probably going to be good, right? If you're hitting those things every single day, absolutely. But if you can, if you want to quantify it over a week, like, man, I hit the rainbow this week, I hit all those this week, fantastic. The only supplement that I recommend that is a non-negotiable is B12. Now, B12 is only made by bacteria. It's not made by animals. It's not made by plants. It lives in water. It lives in the soil. So because we live in a very hygienic world, most of the world, you know, we're not drinking unfiltered water. We're not eating dirt off our fruits and veggies as we pull them out of the ground. That is where we got B12 previously. Or when you eat animal flesh, you might get some B12. But even people who eat an omnivorous diet, many times in my patients, are low in B12. So we are coming from a place of absolute deficiency on a whole food plant-based diet because we're not eating animal flesh and, like I said, the hygienic world. So a small amount of B12 on a daily basis is your best, because also there's many people on medication. So when people transition to a whole food plant-based diet, many times it's because of health and they're things, there's medications and there's certain medical conditions that will decrease your absorption of B12. And so that's why I say take it on a regular basis, a smaller amount, because you're going to more likely be able to get to the levels that you want. So B12, and then making sure you're eating the all the different colors and all the different types of plant foods.
And Brittany, as a new mother, how are you ensuring that Paul there is getting everything that he needs?
Yeah, so luckily right now he's only about 8 months, so we're, you know, still on the breastfeeding, so that's the bulk of his calories. But now incorporating things, it's mainly about like him getting used to textures and just really getting used to like the natural tasting of things. So the way that we've kind of started it was kind of just tasting food for what it is. Some steamed carrots that are just carrots. We kind of went the vegetable route first before we did some fruits, but really just kind of letting him have fun with it and explore. And it's been really fun to see his reaction to things and what he likes and is, it kind of depends on the day. But so far, every food has been kind of a win. We haven't had any foods that he hasn't really liked. So we're lucky.
Yeah. I want to say hi really quick to a gal right now watching in Montreal where it feels like negative 21. -20. Let that one sink in, everybody. Also, my semi-cousin, Randy Carroll, I don't know if there's an actual relation there, watching in Granville, Ohio, where it felt like -6 this morning. I mean, my goodness. And a bit of kudos to you, Britt. Kate Sims is watching right now on Facebook, says that you have helped her lose 20 pounds. So that's awesome to hear. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That is a great testament. And also, plant-based Tina says that Brittany, she makes your banana cookies, which sound absolutely delicious. Speaking of plant-based Tina, Britt, I want to stick with you, and we'll take a couple more. Plant-based Tina is wondering, we'll go back to the faux meats, about making your own with seitan. Is that the better route to take?
Yeah, so seitan is vital wheat gluten. So it's a little bit more processed. I think, just like Dr. Marva said, it's a good stepping thing that you can do to transition. So if there's a day that you really want that meaty texture, I think that's a good option. But of course, you know, sticking to trying to do as more whole, if you can get, I keep talking about soy curls, but they're such a favorite. Soy curls are just fantastic because it's just dehydrated soybeans. So it has kind of a similar texture of seitan if you make it like in strips versus, you know, if you're not making like a big solid mass of it. So I really like doing the soy curls over something like seitan or TBP for the health options for the whole soy. So I think it's a good transition thing, but we don't eat it too much. And if you have a sensitivity to gluten, it can kind of upset your stomach. So just be careful with that.
And let's round up everything today. We'll wind things up with a question from Ian, who really wanted to make sure that this one got asked. And I think that Ian, even though he's eating a plant-based diet, still struggling with a little bit of GERD. And GERD is something that reflux is something that a lot of people suffer from, especially if they're eating that standard American diet. And Ian is wondering if there are some foods that you could recommend that might help Dr. Marbus. He says that he's heard lemon juice can be helpful, but it seems a little bit counterintuitive, acid on acid. Not sure about that, but what can you offer him in terms of advice?
Yeah, I think it really depends. Also, you're going to see absolutely a lower prevalence of GERD with people who eat a whole food plant-based diet because I would say what's causing it, right? So that's the other issue. Is this an issue with, you know, as you're swallowing, you have the esophagus and it enters into the stomach. Is there an actual anatomical problem, right? Is the little closing area where it tightens down, is that too loose, right? So, or is there other things causing inflammation? Do you have an infection? So first of all, we really need to hone in on what's causing it. If you've already moved to a whole food plant-based diet, that's fantastic. The other situation, if you've been on medications for a long period of time, these are some things people don't think about and they just stop their medications abruptly. That may actually cause a kind of a rebound effect, right? So remember, we have these little proton pump inhibitors. Many people are taking the medications that decrease the acid release. And so what you have to do is slowly, slowly, slowly decrease and just kind of like, it's like if you were to see a highway and a long line of gas stations that were your little, you know, acid producers, you have to drive by them very slowly, right? And just turn one on. Okay, that one's good to go. It's pumping. You go to the next one very slowly, because sometimes, again, that rebound effect can be like, oh, it's not working. And then you go back to medication. So again, it's just a very slow transition. But there's so many benefits to even just eating the higher fiber foods, right? Because you're improving your gut mobility, which prevents the the constipation and other things like that. Plus, we're minimizing the high fat meals. We're minimizing the fried foods, the dairy products that can often do that, because those foods can reduce that lower esophageal sphincter pressure is kind of what I was talking about. So I'd recommend eating smaller, more frequent meals. That could be very helpful. You want to food more alkaline type foods, bananas, melons, non-acidic vegetables. I would be careful about, tomatoes, citrus, if there's some of those are your triggers. And then cook and soften the higher fiber foods. So maybe slightly steam or cook your veggies so they're easier to digest. That will kind of reduce the bloating and discomfort. Avoid late night eating. You definitely want to keep, your last meal probably 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. Some other foods you might want to incorporate, maybe some ginger or chamomile. Those can be kind of some natural remedies, but really just avoiding your trigger foods in the beginning. And then if you can approach it from that holistic approach, I think that might lead you in the right direction.
And if you guys could indulge me with one more thing, I know we're just kind of bouncing all over the place, but this is Plant-Based 101 and there's a lot of questions, y'all. One of the things that I think there's a misnomer out there, Brittany, that if you're going to eat a healthy diet, it's going to cost you a ton of money. I love to talk about this, and I know that's something that you've talked about as well. If somebody were to say to you, yeah, well, I could go vegan, I could even give up cheese, but I just don't have the money to do it, what would your response say?
Oh my gosh, it's so much cheaper. If you're eating not processed foods and you're buying, beans and grains and fruit and vegetables, I mean, it literally will save you money. So I love to get, especially this time of year when maybe like fresh produce is a little bit harder to get in the wintertime. I know here in Pittsburgh, it's also very cold. I love to get frozen fruits and veggies that we use. And usually that's a lot, very affordable. And again, you can even buy things in bulk and save a ton of money in discounts. So I actually think it's much cheaper to go plant-based than before. And if you're staying away from those processed foods, I mean, you're definitely going to save a lot of money. And we have that in our book as well, a little section on saving and how you can save your wallet by being plant-based.
And Dr. Marbus, I'm not trying to take any food off of your table, but I would imagine if somebody's eating healthier and they become healthier themselves, their healthcare costs are also going to drop down.
Yes, 100%. And I'll just, share with you, 13 years ago when I went plant-based overnight, so I had the three teenagers, two of them who were boys, and my husband, my grocery bill went drop $400 a month. And
wow.
So there's step one. Remember, this is a pauper's diet, right? This is a diet that if you get the dry beans and the dried whole grains and those things, these are very cheap things to cook, right? And you can sustain a family. I grew up in a home without a lot of money. We ate mostly plant-based, not because of choice or, preference, but because that's what was cheaper. And that's what my mom's like, well, this makes sense. We ate beans almost every day, vegetables, right? So those are things to keep in mind. But absolutely, as you start decreasing your actual health, chronic disease, or you start improving and you're peeling back medications, not only do you not have to pay for the medications, but you don't have to go see the doctors often, right? You're not going to have the potential chronic disease aftercare and adding more medications, less labs, less, hopefully, you're not having to go to the ER for some unknown thing that occurs. Like maybe you're on medications to prevent a heart attack or something, but you're still having chest pain. Now you're worried because again, we've not got to the root cause, right? We're increasing inflammation. You're on more and more medications. So these are the things that you can absolutely prevent or at least lessen the risk of. And so it really depends on where you are. So the early you are there in your life, fantastic. This is a place, especially if you have kids in your home. I don't care if they're little kids, adults, or there are some adult kids that live with you or teenagers or middle school, whatever, I would start introducing into the concept of eating a whole food plant-based diet. The way we did it with our teenagers was really just saying, listen, at home, we eat a whole food plant-based diet. When you go out, you guys do what you want. I'm not here to dictate your life outside of these four walls, but in these four walls, plants rule. And they are plant-based now because of it.
That's awesome. In these four walls, plants rule. That is amazing. That is the perfect way to end today's interview. Plant-based 101, the ultimate guide for mastering the plant-based diet. And by golly, it is indeed the ultimate guide. There's a link to pick up your copy right now in the show description and in the episode notes. Also, links there to both of their websites and their social media accounts. So you can listen back, you can connect with them and really take your health IQ to that next level. I know that there's a lot of bread lovers right now who are chatting it up for everybody who was able to join live. So maybe we can come back and talk about bread and whether or not that's healthy, because there seems to be quite the debate there. Dr. Marbus and Brittany and Paul Giroudi as well. Congratulations on the release of the book. Much needed. Very well done. Cannot wait to talk to you guys again.
Thank you so much.
So much.
Here's the thing with these 101 books. Even if you've been eating a plant-based diet for a long time and you listen or you watch The Exam Room religiously, other podcasts, other blogs, there's always, always, always something to learn. And that's what I love about this book. I've got it on my Kindle Unlimited, and I will be diving in to raise my health IQ even further. So please, if you get the opportunity, get your copy today with that link down below in the show description or in the episode notes. You can also just hop on Amazon, type in Plant-Based 101, The Ultimate Guide, and boom, the book will pop right up. Now, in case you were wondering about that longevity question that came up, I went on our website right after we finished recording the show today, and I pulled some resources on PCRM.org. And there are two paragraphs from the Healthy Aging and Longevity page that we have there that I want to share with you. The first paragraph says, certain foods have been shown to shorten life expectancy and increase the risk of chronic diseases, which lowers the quality of life. A meta-analysis published in the American Journal of Epidemiology reviewed the diets of over 5.75 million people. It found that consuming high amounts of ultra-processed foods, sugar-sweetened beverages, and artificially sweetened beverages, along with processed meat and red meat, were linked to an increased risk of dying from all causes. These are foods that are typically consumed in a Western diet. One study, however, suggests that switching from a Western diet to a diet that is high in plant foods such as whole grains, legumes, fruits, vegetables, and nuts for 20 years could increase your life expectancy by more than a decade. More than a decade. How about that? And I'm not saying that if you're 85 and you suddenly begin eating a plant-based diet that you're going to get a full decade of life, but the odds are certainly that you'll get a few more trips around the sun. And if nothing else, your health is going to improve. So your quality of life is going to improve. And no matter how much time we have here on this earth, isn't it all about living life to the fullest? Don't you want to feel your best so you can do that? I know I do. That's why I live this way. That's why I eat this way. And that's why I do this show. Because I want everybody to feel this good and satisfied and proud of what it is that they've been able to accomplish for themselves in a world where it may seem like everybody else is doing the exact opposite of eating a healthy diet. You can be a leader. You can stand up. You can buck the trend. You can plant a healthy seed so that as your own family tree begins to grow, the branches are healthier than any generation that has come before. That is what this is all about. So pick up a copy of the book, Raise That Health IQ, and if you really want to take everything to the next level and you want to help and inspire others, I'd encourage you to explore the idea of becoming a Food for Life instructor with us here at the Physicians Committee. Right now, through February 7th, applications are open for your one and only opportunity this year to join our growing team of plant-based advocates improving the health of their communities. The Food for Life Instructor Training offers an excellent small business opportunity for those who are enthusiastic about health and wellness and disease prevention and want to share that passion with others. And you can be the catalyst for change. To apply to become a Food for Life instructor, head over to ffltraining.org. That is ffltraining.org. Get those applications in before February 7th. And if you want to help the show grow healthier too, head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your shows. Follow and subscribe there, and please leave a 5-star rating and a nice review. That really does help usher in a new era of health for so many millions of people around the world. You can be that catalyst of change. Think about this. You could be living in North Carolina and listening to the show and change somebody's life who's living in Oregon or Hawaii or Tahiti or Tibet, all around the world. Because by leaving that 5-star rating and nice review, it helps the show grow in the podcast rankings. And the more we have, the easier it becomes for somebody to find this information. And we want to change as many lives as possible. But for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Dr. Laurie Marvis and Brittany Giroudi for being here as we raise our health IQs and celebrate the release of Plant-Based 101, the ultimate guide for mastering the plant-based diet. And for everyone here at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.